Hello, how are you doing? How's it going? What a time. So today's episode of Radio Mentee features my friend Trisha Eastman. Trisha and I connected a few years ago when we were on a summit together with our mutual friend Lorna Liana, who is the creator of a website called entheonation.com. Trisha and I only briefly connected then, but we later reunited when Trisha was a panelist at an iteration of WITMA in Los Angeles for a panel on integrating the psychedelic experience. She shared that panel with my dear friend Brandy Sabella, Ramin Nazer, Colin Frangicetto, who was a guest on the show. And it was a really great conversation around integration. So it's funny to find ourselves here in what feels like a worldwide collective psychedelic experience, COVID times. Integration is going to be a very necessary part of this strange initiation we're all undergoing. And it's funny how the spiral of synchronicity that connected us spiraled into this conversation and beyond. So if you've been tuning in to the weekly live Facebook podcast chats that I've been doing called Isolation Tank, Trisha is usually a panelist on there, and she always offers such heart-based perspective. She's a really beautiful person inside and out, and I'm really, really grateful to be able to call her a friend. And I just have a ton of respect for the work she does within the psychedelic space. So today's conversation goes through multidimensional subject matter, Trisha's path, the medicine path, the initiatory path, the path. we talk about all sorts of things that are interesting and worth sitting with or exploring more. Or at least I think so. So a little bit about Trisha Eastman. So Trisha Eastman is a pioneer in the psychedelic movement. As a medicine woman, she offers highly curated retreats in countries where use is legal, working with 5-MeO-DMT, psilocybin mushrooms, and iboga. She has been initiated into the Bwiti traditions of Fang and Ngondi Misoko tradition, as well as facilitated the psycho-spiritual iboga program for Crossroads Treatment Center in Mexico. Since 2015, Eastman has supported over 1,200 people through powerful medicine experiences, including celebrities, political leaders, and Navy SEAL veterans. She supports movements related to preservation of the sacred medicines for future generations and working with the ancient wisdom traditions with respect and reverence. Hope you enjoy our conversation. To learn more about Trisha's work, check out her website, psychedelicjourneys.com, and be sure to follow her on Instagram as well at Psychedelic Journeys. Welcome to Radio Amenti, embracing the eternal now, where minds and timelines merge, inspiring synchronicity, awakening potential, and making sense of change. Trisha, so happy to have you with me.
Hi, Jennifer. I'm so honored to be here. I love you and all the work that you're doing, and just really excited for us to make some magic alchemy together.
Well, it's been a long time coming. I know we had tried to schedule a while back at your home, and then a few times just timing didn't align. So now's perfect timing.
Yeah, here we are. And I don't know if we can speak about how the world is right now, but it's in its own unique place, and so it's quite an interesting time for us to be talking amidst the global pandemic.
God, there's like so many different words for it, right? The global pandemic, the great equalizer, the great awakening, all of these things. And I know, you know, it's really this interesting time period that we're all going through where we have to kind of just collectively sit and meditate on what is on the other side of this, what this actually is. And one of the things that I can say has been really interesting from it are the conversations that have been emerging just in general. So wherever you stand on what this is or what it could be or what it will be, I think the fact that there is such consciousness expanding conversation happening in a way that's kind of surprising to me. I mean, wouldn't you agree? It's kind of interesting to kind of see the conversations that are happening around this whole thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think that we are in an opportune time. You know, I think that those of us who are on this path, and I'm sure many that are listening, not to get too far on the woo scale, but know that we've been going through a shift and that a golden age has been prophesied for many, you know, that this was the time that it was to happen, you know, like within this time of our lives, you know, coming here, incarnating on the planet. And many of us on a spiritual level also knew that part of our purpose of our choice to incarnate on this planet was to be here for this time. And so it is interesting because I feel that we are in this potent field of manifestation. And as we're moving into a level of consciousness that is not as heavy in terms of, you know, going into like a 5D consciousness, our thoughts, our what we say, everything is influencing the reality. And so it's almost like this consciousness war happening where there's like all these arrows flying around and you can see all these timelines manifesting, and it's quite interesting.
Yeah. That's a really good way to put it, like the arrows flowing around or flying around, because it does feel that way. It's almost like this great divide, because those that are getting it really get it. And I feel like especially being in the medicine space has helped quell a lot of anxiety that I think if I had not been on the medicine path, I probably would be in a different position than I am right now. But it feels like this is what we've been waiting for a very long time.
Yes. I think that some of us, you know, being, you know, veterans in the psychedelics, veterans in, you know, alternative healing, functional medicine, all these things, you know, to start to see a potential timeline where the world will finally match our deepest heart's desires and dreams is so close is really, truly a blessing. And, you know, it's also a conscious choice where we all have to step forward, which is, you know, with our will aligned with the divine, to choose that reality for ourselves, no matter what else is happening around us.
And to also realize that you can choose it. Yeah, you know, I'm so haunted by the graffiti I saw in Hong Kong that said we can't go back to normal because the normal that we had is the problem. And conversation around why we can't go back to normal feels really important too, because when you're at this crossroads of choice to make, like, what will we step into next? It's a step forward. It can't be a step backward. It can't be sustainability. It's regenerative. So how do we regenerate? What does that look like? What does that mean? I think that even to have to pose those questions to, you know, folks that haven't even thought that the illusion of choice was there. It's very interesting to just kind of imagine what that's going to be like.
Yeah. Well, we have to really look at the regenerative way of living. And, you know, I've always thought of this idea of, you know, it's something that's taught in martial arts, and it's about how we do things with the least amount of effort, how we do things with the least amount of impact. It's, you know, that Aikido move. And that doesn't happen through the masculine approach, which is force or, you know, externalizing things, you know, externalizing your reality, reacting to your reality. It comes from creating a stillness inside and creating a sense of balance and equanimity. And so I think more than ever, even though, you know, I hate to say this, but we all ultimately deep down within us, within our souls, all know the truth of, you know, karma, the truth of, I like to think of it like almost this Buddhic way, philosophy of being, that we have to create balance within in order for us all to survive. And that includes distribution of wealth and everything.
Yeah. And even the understanding of masculine and feminine, I think there's some confusion too, or people that are dipping their toes into spiritual waters of what divine feminine or sacred masculine means. And it extends beyond the idea of a gendered concept. It's the left brain, it's the right brain. How do we merge both hemispheres to become one? And that's something that I think, you know, it can have like a layer of confusion around, because it's not necessarily, the shift has to be that it's female centric, it's feminine consciousness. It's a consciousness more than it is a gender.
Absolutely. And if you look at, you know, the way the indigenous, their core philosophies, which have spanned centuries, and they really are, you know, ultimately around the feminine, and the feminine being the care and stewardship of mother. It doesn't necessarily mean that one sex is dominating the other. It means that humans are of earth. We were born here on earth, and earth has been the source of our air, our food, our water. Everything that we receive comes from the mother, and our job is to take care of her. Like, we are stewards of this planet.
Kind of circling back to that, I don't even know if we've ever really fully dove into this in our many chats that we've had, but I'd love to know what set you on this path and how you got here. Even, you know, what led you to the medicine? What led you to exploring these ancient ways of being? Like, what was your origin point?
Well, I laugh because, you know, for the things that I say, you know, about getting in harmony with nature, I definitely had a point in my life almost 10 years ago where I wasn't in harmony with nature. And I had anxiety. I had eating disorders. And I knew, like, I think the time where it really struck me hard was I was living in Washington State, but I traveled quite a bit. And I was on the boardwalk in Venice, and I saw this psychic. And she said to me, "You smile on the outside, but you don't smile on the inside." And that moment, it struck me. I was like, she's right. I'm not truly happy. Here I had all the trappings of success, wealth. I was married. I had businesses. I owned 4 houses. You know, I could have been set up for life financially, you know, like the American dream. And literally was so unhappy. I started taking MDMA again, which was something that I was like really into back in the raver days, back in like, for me, it was like 1997, 1998, and a little later than that into my early 20s. And I had this like really profound, the best word to describe it is Kundalini awakening. And in the Kundalini awakening, I felt an angelic presence, and the presence said to me, you aren't in alignment with your true path. You know, that this is not your authentic self. You're not living your authentic life. And so I literally left my husband. left my whole entire life, which was of much shock and surprise to my husband when I left him. I said, I'm going to Buenos Aires. And I went to Buenos Aires with my best friend for like a month. And I said, you know, I think that originally the conversation started, and this is a funny story. I read, like, I think it was like 2 years before that, I read The 4-Hour Workweek by Tim Ferriss. And I remember saying to my husband, I want to sell all of our stuff. And I want to take all the money that we have, all of our assets, and I want to figure out, like, I want to travel the world, and I want to go on like a spiritual, you know, quest. And I want to come back with a strong idea of what we can do to be of service to the planet. Like, what's something that we can give back with what we have? Like, I really wanted to be aligned with my purpose. And he said, I can't see that happening for at least 5 years. So I stuck in the relationship, still like very much like devoted to him. But finally that time came when I had that MDMA experience where I realized that this was a journey I needed to take on my own. So I'll fast forward to that. I traveled all around Europe, was in Europe for about 3 months after Argentina. And in that time, was studying this spiritual path that I had kind of been into holistic healing. I did consulting for like really high-end spas, you know, places like Canyon Ranch, or the spas that you would find in like a Ritz-Carlton, you know, like really high-end spas. But I studied wellness. And I really started to get into the like more metaphysical aspects of spirituality and starting to discover my healing through those processes, and had just these massive experiences that were quite profound that really directed me that I needed to move to Los Angeles. And so I did. And along that path, I interestingly met this guy, Martin Polanco, who owned a clinic in Mexico called Crossroads. And he was treating people for addiction, Ibogaine addiction. I'm sorry, heroin addiction is what I meant to say, like opiate detox, but Ibogaine is a substance for treating opiate addiction. And I told him about my eating disorders, and I said, I wonder if Ibogaine can help with addiction to opiates. I wonder if it can help with food addiction. And he said, I don't really know that answer, but I'd be interested to see what would happen. Do you want to do an experiment? And so literally I went down to Tijuana, Mexico. One day he called me and said, oh yeah, I've got an opening. You know, someone canceled. You know, I got a bed open. You want to come and you know, have this experience. And, you know, of course I was a little afraid, considering there are some, you know, medical complications that I had read about with Ibogaine. And interestingly, in the medicine, I had one of the most profound experiences I've ever had, where I literally met myself for the first time, and I saw this expansive singularity of everything coming into one, and my connection to that, you know, into that wholeness, into that oneness. And I realized that there was no reason ever that I could withhold love from myself, that I could use my weight, my appearance in any way, which was the root of these eating disorders. So, you know, I was literally crying tears for hours in gratitude to the medicine for giving me this gift. And I asked the medicine, how can I be of service? Within 2-3 weeks, Martin asked me if I would be a facilitator for his psycho-spiritual program at the clinic in Mexico. And that's how I kind of got started in this work.
Yeah, it's really interesting. A common thread I've seen with a lot of great healers, teachers, voices in this space is the contrast. Like you had mentioned, we knew what we were coming into this timeline now. So it's almost like the life of our story had to unfold in such a way to see the side of where lack of self-love can take us, too much emphasis on the outside, not enough emphasis on the inside, so that when the pendulum swings and you get to the space where you see how beautiful it is beyond the material, you can find that sacred balance between both. You know, mm-hmm. I think that the teachers of the modern time have to be equipped with the modern problems, which I think mm-hmm. so many of us can face and have faced and can relate to. Having an eating disorder, seeing that money doesn't necessarily buy happiness, not understanding what society traditionally would say, oh, you've got it made, is actually not what's fulfilling. It's very interesting how that thread seems to weave a bigger picture.
Yeah. And the sad thing is that there are still many people suffering from colonization. Our society, even, you know, like there's no separation. Pretty much every race, whether they're indigenous or Caucasian or Asian or no matter where they're from, all has an indigenous lineage connected with it. And when we go back to the early timelines, when we practiced those ceremonial ways of being, people were happy and there wasn't the same kind of problems that we have today with the massive mental illness, mm-hmm. suicide, depression, everything that has, you know, plagued our culture. And so, you know, one of the biggest pieces is this division of community. You know, society has been designed in a way that keeps the brain in a state of separation. So all of the things that we do in our society, you know, our whole American system is based on it. Look at our political parties, you know, it's blue and red, black and white. All these things are really about polarity and separation. And it's this binary way of thinking that has really got us into trouble. And that goes back to our first imprints of our subconscious mind, which are only having a mother and father template for that mirroring. When in a village tribal culture, you'd have an entire community and many, many grandmothers, grandfathers, many aunts, many other mothers that were all collectively raising children.
I mean, that's they say it takes a village now as like a half joke, but literally, I think that we've gotten so far away from that mentality. But that's really what we thrive in. We thrive in togetherness, but the mutant matrix of separation has somehow caused us to forget that.
Yeah, and what we need to do is now we have this opportunity, Jennifer, all of us, everyone listening, and you and me, to decide, do we want to continue the binary life, the colonized life? You know, what kind of world do you want to live in? My feeling is to look at society and redesign it in a way that we can bring back communal aspects of it. And it's going to take some healing because we have a lot of trauma. And that trauma is what prevents us from wanting to be in community, because we get triggered by our parents, because we get triggered by certain personalities. But it's going to take us, number one, learning how to be in relationship, whether that's a love relationship or, you know, a best friend, but learning how to have deep, authentic relationships, then having that move into small communities, and then eventually into bigger communities.
I think, too, the interesting point in all of it as well is, you know, even on your journey, the way that you get there is to find love of self first. And I think that's one of the hardest things. It is interesting that your medicine path, it seems very heart medicine, right? Starting from the heart and working your way out. But, you know, for somebody that may not be on a medicine path or is just trying to find a way to reconnect to a space of self-love, how do you get there when it feels so hard to look in that mirror and feel that deeply?
I feel that the thing that we struggle with in our society is this kind of victim perpetrator story that's kind of been part of our archetypal, it's a lower vibration shadow template. And we really just have to start taking responsibility. And that really starts, self-love is not just about like giving yourself hugs and it's, you know, all those, you know, like warm fuzzy things. It's about also having really solid boundaries and really having a deep time for reflection. And I really believe that the heart is this, it should be the center of our consciousness, where our culture, the heart is far, far away from being the center of our culture. It's getting more towards the center, but it's the mind that is the center of our culture. And so when we look at the idea of balance and equanimity, as we were talking about earlier in the conversation, that is what love is about. Love is about that center, finding that center point. And so one way that we can start to do that within ourselves is by integrating our binary thinking patterns. So the way that we integrate binary thinking patterns is by, rather than being reactive to any kind of external stimulus or even internal stimulus, taking a moment and bringing in this part of the observer, a non-dual part of yourself that can look at things objectively. Oh, is that really so bad? You know, and it's just taking that extra second, taking a breath, feeding your body with oxygen. And the more that you do that, the more boundaries you create for yourself and the more sovereignty you have, because you realize that you can take responsibility with how the world impacts you. And truly, I feel like that's the most important part of our self-love.
In the spiritual space, there's so much emphasis on light work. I'm a light worker, but shadow work is so important too, and integrating those sides of ourselves. Like you said, like, what is getting triggered in me? Why am I reacting this way? How can I sit with this, observe this, love this, and integrate it fully?
Yeah, this observer is the most powerful thing that we have, because when we bring in the observer, what it does is it starts to balance the left and right hemispheres of the brain. And if you look at the body and you look at our body of trauma, we have these two systems that operate. One system is our old animal brain. This is the older equipment, the amygdala, which regulates, you know, when we get activated in trauma, we go into parasympathetic, where we're elevated and we're reliving trauma, as where the frontal lobe and our higher mind, when we're tuning into that part of ourselves, we're much more regulated, we're much more calm. And if we rely on one or the other too much, that's where we get into trouble and where we get stuck. The two become integrated through the heart. And so literally, we can heal our own trauma. We can create new neural pathways. And I feel like anyone can do it.
Understanding how powerful we really are on our own is a really special gift to unlock. And, you know, integrating into that. But the thing I think we have talked about before, you know, in sharing how on my path, I had a very challenging ayahuasca ceremony back in December. But I think it's important to talk a little bit about how, you know, when you go on this journey of self-exploration, how chasing peak experiences can come with as a cautionary tale at times too. you know, and where giving yourself space for integration is really important, like just to not keep searching to have time to sit too.
Well, it's not the experience itself that creates the shift. It's within the integration, because these medicines are here to show us things, but ultimately, and I know, Jennifer, you know this too, that we get tested. You know, the universe will test us to see if we can actually hold that new vibration that we stepped into through that peak experience. And if we can't, we actually lower in vibration. And so, you know, when you look at a lot of these cultures that use initiation or rites of passage, typically they involve a deep process. And that deep process involves many days of purification rituals. And even like the Egyptian mystery initiatory path, which both you and I have gone through, is, you know, the kings, the pharaohs, they would, you know, train physically for years before they would go through these initiations. And many of these initiations were, for instance, you know, they would train. One of the trainings I remember hearing from an Egyptologist last time I was in Egypt was running 88 times around the Great Pyramid every day was part of 88 times around the Great Pyramid, which is pretty big. I can't remember the exact dimensions of it. I think it's like something crazy. It's huge.
A lot,
but 88 times to be able to be physically prepared to do the initiation. So they always believed that you needed to be strong. So they were doing these physical preparations. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to be strong to do this work. It's just that when the body's physically strong, it's a mirror of the spirit world as well. You know, that means we can be strong in the spirit world too. And then the purification rituals would be, you know, depending on the culture, a lot of it involved bathing rituals, which many times were different confessions that you would make. And it was really about like doing a deep life review. Every lie that you've told, every, you know, bad thing that you've done, anything you did with ill will, most of those things being things that you probably did to yourself, and going through a deep inventory. And then some of the cultures even had different purification rituals with fire, the Temezcal being one that, you know, maybe our Western culture might be most, also known as the Sweat Lodge, familiar with. In the Bwiti tradition, they do a similar process called ifulu, where they literally light a fire underneath you, and they use a lot of sacred plants to clean the evil, clean the darkness from you. And it's a deep, uncomfortable purification process. It's like your own personal sweat lodge. And then some even, for instance, in Shipibo, as well as in Bwiti being the tradition from Africa, equatorial Africa, that works with Iboga, Shipibo being the tradition from the Amazon that works with a pharmacology, you know, all the plants in the kingdom of the Amazon, the plant kingdom, but also ayahuasca. But they would typically take many of these traditions, vomitifs. And the vomitifs were plants that would pull dark energy from your body in the form of making you purge, making you throw up. And after all of those processes were complete, many days of purification rituals, and sometimes also isolation, like days of isolation, sometimes being in a chamber or a hut for a week or sometimes even longer, then you would take a sacrament. You know, it could be ayahuasca, it could be boga, it could be the soma, like they did in the Eleusinian mysteries, you know, whatever the tradition. And then after that, you would go into the spirit world And in the initiation, you know, you would receive important information about your life purpose and usually get a name, like a spiritual name that you only use in ceremony. And then after that, you would have many days where you would still be in the village or wherever you were doing this initiation, that you would be in silence processing, or there would be sometimes different types of ceremonies, such as, you know, in the Bwiti tradition, in some traditions, they have what's called an etika ceremony, where you are given baths and there's more preparations made for blessing you and giving you the food, the spiritual food, for you to complete your mission coming out of ceremony. And so there would be like different sacred plants that would be eaten, but not necessarily for the sake of journeying like you did in the main part of the initiation, but mainly just to build your spiritual energy so that you could go into the world and have grace, bring grace with you. So they weren't just going and going to a weekend ceremony somewhere, you know, and then going back to their job the next day.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I can't even imagine that. But it's such an interesting thing, even, you know, hearing the process, you know, the thing, it's funny because so many, and I'm sure this happens to you all the time too, when people come to you and ask you about like, oh, I don't want to get sick, or I don't want to throw up, I don't want to do that. And it's like, no, you're getting well. Like every time in those phases where you're like in the purge or letting go of those things, it's wild, because I find myself in such a space of gratitude, because that's not in me anymore. And to prepare for a deep ceremony where you're already doing a purgative and you're already cleansing the body and you're already just purifying, the level of connection, I imagine, on the other side of that has to be so incredible, because you're not taking in all of that darkness. At least you're lessening it, it seems.
Yeah, I mean, the more, when you do the work, the more you prepare, the more you feel is at stake when you're there. For instance, you know, when you're giving yourself the bath, you realize, you know, hey, I came all this way. I have my microphone to God right now, or whatever you want to call it, source, great spirit, you know, this is my chance. This, you know, I've been given this blessing, this opportunity, and you do it like you mean it. Like there's so much intention behind it. And so, you know, when we have the right elders or the right people guiding that, and then we have within ourselves the right inner preparation, one ceremony can do what 100 ceremonies would do in, you know, another setting where those things were not done.
I think back, you know, so you started your path from MDMA to iboging, and then other medicines entered the path as they, you know, usually show up when they're meant to. Have you found, like, looking back on the path too, that there is kind of this initiatory path, the way the medicines present themselves and show up depending on what area you're working through and on?
The answer to that. So when I work with another medicine from the Sonoran Desert, which I work with much less now because it's definitely something that's sensitive, but it's a venom from a toad. And when I had people that would reach out and say, I'm not sure if I'm supposed to do this toad medicine or not, I would say, ask. Like, ask yourself, ask your soul, ask the toad, ask your guides. And then every single time people would come to me They would send me pictures on my phone and they'd be like, I just saw like 3 toads today. I never see toads. That feels like a sign. And I feel like the same thing happened with me with ayahuasca, which I did actually drink. I did work with ayahuasca before working with Abogaine. I just, you know, didn't want to give people a huge long story. I wanted to keep it short. I fast forwarded a little bit on that piece. But when I worked with ayahuasca, I was at, I think it was at Burning Man, and it was like literally like, no, because it was before I went to Burning Man. It was, I think it was at like South by Southwest or something. And like within one day, I had like 5 people mention it to me. And I was like, that's crazy. I had read a book about it. I knew I wanted to do it. And then I ended up at a place called Cafe Gratitude. And I got invited to sit in an ayahuasca ceremony by someone who I made friends with there. And I was like, what is like the odds of that? So I knew it was something that was aligned for me to do. I have so many stories about that place. I've had so many crazy mystical experiences there.
Wow. That's so funny. Cafe Gratitude too. I love Cafe Gratitude. But yeah, speaking on that about just how synchronicity extends beyond, you know, when we're seeking in the medicine space, sometimes these things just come to you exactly when you need them. Around synchronicity and just how the spiral of life and everything that you need extends beyond medicine. Because even when I think of our friendship and our connection about, God, that summit that we did with Lorna had to be, what, 4 years ago almost? 3 or 4 years ago? And we only briefly connected then. And then at WITMA, it was so great because we had that great call, but we didn't really get a chance to connect so much at the event. But then the spiral kept coming through, and I just feel like the friendship that we've cultivated over the last few months has been so special to me and such a really incredible healing part of the journey that I think kind of circles back even to the beginning of the conversation about love, community, finding your people to evolve and create with, and how sometimes it happens in the most unexpected ways.
Totally. I feel the same about you. And I feel like there's like this little vortex between all of our connections with each other. And I just see this magical weaving that's taking place that is just like continues to be like crazily synchronistic. And it's so interesting because I've been writing a book and I've been so grateful to have some time to write. And I guess the hard thing is like to really articulate that feeling of like knowing when you're truly in flow consciousness, not like it's this technical thing, you know, but being able to articulate it so that it's like an understandable thing of how you follow that trail of breadcrumbs that leads to your highest joy and excitement.
As you're writing it, it will continue to emerge too. So, I mean, speaking of the book, I'd love to talk a little bit about that as well. So, you know, we've talked privately, but for those listening, when can we expect this to potentially reach the world, and what will you be exploring in the words?
Yeah. Well, there's a lot of different, you know, I've been working on this for a long time. It came to me, I mean, I started on it like back in like 2012. And, you know, I don't want to get too far out there, but I'll just say like I had to remove a lot of blocks because I feel like I wrote a lot in my past lives. And I feel that I was killed for writing, for sharing certain information in past lives. And so literally had a lot of struggles just getting myself to write. Like I had the framework, I knew exactly, but then like just like getting it out, like getting it to pop out of me was just like giving birth. It was, you know, painful. And, you know, really what I wanted to share with the world was a unique way of looking at these different things. One of them, you know, the metaphysical, these altered states of consciousness. But being someone who's worked with you know, somewhere around 1,500 different people in these altered states, not only have I seen some consistencies of different phenomenology, different things that really work, that I felt like it was really important to share that. And the other piece is that, you know, I really felt that there's a lot of, you know, great people out there like Michael Pollan, who has done a huge service of really bringing psychedelics into a group of people that maybe wouldn't be interested in psychedelics, you know, bringing it into a more mainstream audience. But there is a lack of women voices and Indigenous voices. And so a lot of the information that I share is also information that I've received working with the Kogi, working with the Bwiti, working with the Dagara people, working with the Sangomas of South Africa, and many different really beautiful ancestral lineages. And in the process, really doing it in a respectful way, because really my highest goal in the book is to help people to understand how to be in right relationship with these cultural traditions, because there is a major issue that's happening in our culture that's been pretty rampant, and it's called cultural mining. And it's where individuals are taking things from cultures without there being a proper cultural exchange or permissions. And so I'm slowly walking through the process. It takes longer than possible because I have to keep checking in with spirit and checking in with the ancestors to make sure that the things that I'm writing are okay to share. Because some of it's information that wasn't able to be shared in the past, but now, based on the times we are in on this planet, those permissions have been given.
I mean, talk about divine timing. The fact that, you know, you are going to be the voice of this, the voiceless that have had this wisdom within their traditions for so long. And I really resonate with the fact that I love Michael Pollan so much. I found the path through Daniel Pinchbeck, you know, like there's so much masculine voices in the space, but to have a feminine consciousness speak on your experience and the wisdom within these traditions, I feel the timing couldn't be more ripe and ready to receive it. So I look forward to this book. I think even for those on the medicine path, if you look at the kind of mythology and wisdom within the journeys that I'm sure you'll be sharing, many of us can relate to that beyond having had the experiences.
Yeah. And, you know, I personally don't ever want to call myself a voice for anyone. I mean, I'm just here to be a bridge and hope. I mean, I'm not saying I have any answers or know anything, but I really hope that the information will help influence things in a good direction. And yeah, I just really want to be a voice for the medicine as much as possible and really try to remove myself from it. I mean, it's been the hardest for me because I've seen just this way of living in our culture. It makes it so much more hard to integrate these big mystical experiences, and probably the reason why people keep coming back again and again to do, you know, have big mystical experiences with psychedelics is because, you know, they get the reset, they go to nature, they get realigned, but then they go back into the city, back into the Wi-Fi, back into the busyness, back into a certain level of consciousness. And it makes it really hard to integrate it. And so I'm hoping there'll be some good things that will be shared that will help people in being able to move from, you know, the world that we're in now, which is who knows what that's going to be now, into a world that's more integrated.
So, I mean, so many things because of the current state of affairs have had to be put on a big pause as we collectively are in this transition period. One of those was our trip that we had been planning to do in the you know, potential fall of this year. But beyond the book, are there any other new projects on the horizon that you want to share?
Yeah, I mean, going back to like what we talked about initially in the call about this great opportunity that we have in humanity to build a new infrastructure that's more supportive of the way of being that we've connected with through these altered states of consciousness. I spent some time with the Kogis, and they had given this transmission, and in the transmission they said, humans, they live in boxes, they go to work in rectangles. They said actually rectangles, not boxes. And they sleep on a rectangle. And then I'll add in there, we also die in a rectangle. We're buried in a rectangle. And that the universe is in spirals. And that the animals, if they were to eat the salt and the fried potatoes, that's how what they called them, the French fried potatoes, and the frozen foods that we eat, they would lose their connection and they would soon die because they had disconnected from the web of life. So that animals in nature, if they lived the way that we do, would not survive. And I noticed myself, like, you know, I have a beautiful 3-acre ranch in the Malibu Mountains. And I'm like, oh, why shouldn't I want to live here for the rest of my life? But I've always felt like it was a little off. And I realized, like, oh, these canned recessed lights, they block my crown chakra. And I could feel the electricity in the wall and how that would affect me when I was meditating. And the more sensitive over the years I've become, the more that I'm aware that the houses that we live in are not conducive to health and wellness. And so I received a transmission of a really beautiful modern type of structure that mimics the same type of way that people live in historic times back in the golden ages in Egypt, but also the way that the Dogon people and the Kogi, the house, the kind of houses that they live in, but in a more modern version. And I want to roll out a prototype, which I'm working on, a financing model that does not have the same extractive, you know, energies that would not be in alignment with nature to be able to bring it forward. But it really is a sanctuary that is designed to regenerate the human energy field.
Wow. That sounds amazing. It's so wild too, to, you know, the little things that we never really think of, right? We live in the rectangle, we die in the rectangle, we work in the rectangle. We are in a society that is of the triangular nature, the very top-down model. And yeah, just revising the geometry of our life, what a profound shift that could cause. That's amazing.
I mean, right now where we are at a crux where we know the 5G technology is going to have an impact on our health and our well-being if we're not using certain things to protect our body, where we have more toxins in our environment, even though, you know, what's happened now has definitely lowered pollution and things, but we live in a pretty toxic environment. It's not necessarily something that's a luxury, it's a necessity.
I mean, and the 5G stuff, I mean, it's hard because those who, what is the Gandhi quote? It says, first they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. You know, I remember hearing about the 5G stuff so long ago, and everybody's like, oh, it's conspiracy. And it's like now, even speaking of it, it's still, I remember a friend of mine runs Collective Evolution, and Facebook basically deplatformed them for sharing something about 5G because they said it's fake news. but it's happening. And, you know, I know that you're more adept on kind of what the impact of this technology could have. Could you share a little bit, just for people tuning in, what maybe some resources for finding information and ways to protect yourself through this kind of rollout of technology?
Yeah, I mean, two things. You know, I don't want to put any more fear porn out there. Ultimately, when we do the work on ourselves, we're in a dimension of consciousness that can transmute anything. But most people just aren't in that level of consciousness. So we definitely need to keep doing our own inner work to strengthen our energy field. I mean, if we know anything about the immune system, you know, or the biological organism, you need germs to practice on. You need, you know, negative, you know, like eustress, healthy stress to build strength. And so I don't think in itself we need to be like, oh God, we're all going to die here. But there are some real facts that have been put out there. There's a really great film called The 5G Apocalypse. It's kind of a scary title, but by Sasha Stone, that talks about some of the research, some of the doctors. But one thing that I remember distinctively about the 5G is that it's not just a damaging to the organism, but it's damaging to the microbial DNA of the body, which is the microbiome. And so what it does is it basically destroys, you know, our body is more other organisms than it is human. You know, we have all these different foreign organisms, and they're not foreign in the sense that they live inside us, but they're not of us, is what I mean by foreign, that are living in there. And really, the way that I look at health and vitality is it's like almost like, I hate to use the word war, but it's a war of the good bugs versus the bad bugs. Well, if you damage these microbial DNA, the bad bugs just win. And then all of a sudden you get all these diseases in your body. And, you know, there's been already some test sites that have gone live with the 5G where there were like garbage bags full of birds that literally just like dropped from the air from the frequency of the 5G. So this is probably one of the most toxic things that we've encountered. It's highly likely that we will be able to reverse it because there's such a big push towards an all AI society with self-driving cars and, you know, all tech-driven that so many people have big money behind. And so it's going to be hard, but we can protect ourselves. And there's amazing devices like the 5G BioShield, which you can get at 5GBioShield.com. There's some other devices out there, really powerful devices. And there's a really cool thing, Organite, which is a material that's basically organic and inorganic materials layered in kind of like a resin material. And what it does is it emits a frequency that pushes all negative frequencies away. So it's like a frequency technology. And these are things that you can either buy, but there's a lot of websites that have instructables and you can make your own pyramids. And there's different types. There's ones that specifically work on EMF frequencies. And it's very much the same technology that the Egyptians used for the pyramids, because when you look at the pyramids, there were these different layers of different types of stone, like the granite and different stones layered together that in coming in contact with each other, the pressure created piezoelectric energy. And the pyramids that are made with organite, if you put crystals in them or you get one that has a crystal in it, it creates a pressure around the crystal as the resin hardens that also creates that piezoelectric frequency, which is what's pushing the other frequencies away.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of organite. I actually, on Evolve and Ascend, we have a tutorial on how to make them. And you just have to make sure that you're in a very ventilated space because that resin can can be challenging.
Yeah.
But Willem Reich's story, the person that discovered orgone energy, talk about, he was a little known Tesla of his time too.
Yeah, amazing, genius technology. And it's so funny because I thought about, like, what if we took all the plastic in the ocean and all the trash that we had, and we turned them into organite pyramids, and we stuck one near Fukushima, to like counterbalance. Maybe we could do something with all of that,
That's actually a great idea. I wish it would.
Someday, maybe we will.
Oh, man. Well, the future is riddled with potential. That's for sure.
Yes.
When they say riddled loosely, because it does feel like a great riddle that we're navigating, but it's a beautiful time to be alive, even in the riddle we're in.
Yes. Nothing serious is happening. It's like my favorite saying is, it's you against you. Who's going to win?
Thank you so much for coming on, Tricia. I mean, obviously this won't be the last time, but I've really enjoyed this conversation, and I know our audience definitely will as well. Is there any website or where can people follow up with your work for those who are tuning in?
Well, just want to thank you, Jennifer. It's such an honor that we're having this conversation, and just grateful to everyone that's out there listening. And I do have a website for my retreats. Of course, I'm not doing a lot of retreats at this very moment, but it's a great way to stay connected. I also, and that's my website is psychedelicjourneys.com. And then I have another NGO that really is focused on cultural awareness and preservation, and that's ancestralheart.com.